is CLNS Radio, the home of Internet Sports Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the CLNS Media Boston Celtics post-game show, sponsored by RX Bar, the all-natural whole food protein bar made without the fillers, additives, chemicals, or sugars of other protein bars. I am your host, Nick Sesento, back after a brief hiatus away from you, the Boston Celtics fans. Just like to welcome you back to the CLNS Boston Celtics post-game show. Feels good to be with you again. I will be joined shortly by my co-host, Syracuse's own basketball savant, Taylor McLeod. Tonight, the Boston Celtics hosted the Indiana Pacers, coming into the game with a one-game lead for first place in the Eastern Conference over the Toronto Raptors. While the Indiana Pacers, the surprising Indiana Pacers, led by breakout all-star Victor Oladipo, came in to this game ranked sixth place in the Eastern Conference. The Celtics had won four of their previous five games, including an overtime thriller against what many consider to be a potential Eastern Conference contender, the Washington Wizards, last night. This is the second night of the back-to-back. While the Pacers came into the game having won six of their previous nine, this game was a tale of two halves, with the Pacers opening up a 26-point lead in the second quarter before heading into the half up 21 points, 59-38. At one point, the Boston Celtics were shooting 20%, nearly 20% from the field, while the Indiana Pacers shot 60% from the field, thus, of course, garnering the 26-point lead that the Indiana Pacers had late into the second quarter. But as is so often is the case with this Boston Celtics team, they rallied from behind with the 36-14 run in the third quarter, culminating in a 35-foot three-pointer by Terry Rozier, probably his only good offensive play of the game in a month that has seen him average, prior to this game, 18 points, 5 rebounds, and 3 assists per game in 4 games in February, despite an atrocious shooting night tonight from Terry Rozier, 1 for 11 from the field, 1 for 6 from 3. But before we get into all the individual stats, we'll finish up breaking down exactly what happened in this game. The Boston Celtics went into the fourth quarter, I believe, down by only 4 points after the Terry Rozier three-pointer. The fourth quarter intensely contested. The Boston Celtics actually took a lead with 4 minutes left in the game. Back and forth game from that point on until maybe about the last two and a half minutes of the game, in which the Pacers basically came out ahead, ended up victorious, winning the game by a final score of 97-91 behind an outstanding, incredible. Some of the moves, some of the things this guy did were unbelievable to me, made me jealous in some ways, despite the fact that the Boston Celtics have Kyrie Irving on their team and fans like me can get to watch him every single night. Watching Victor Oladipo in his 35-point, 10-rebound, 5-steal performance tonight, just basically cooking, shredding, burning, torching our beloved Boston Celtics with 35 points, 10 rebounds, and 5 steals tonight. Just not something you wanted to see from the Boston Celtics in an Eastern Conference that is getting tighter by the minute. We all know by now that the Cleveland Cavaliers have overhauled their roster. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show as well. Taylor McLeod, it's been a while, my brother.
Yes, sir.
What is it that you saw in this game that I didn't cover in that not-so-brief but somewhat brief kind of, you know, rundown of how I saw the game go down? What is it that you saw?
I saw a team that all season long has gotten down big dug themselves big holes, and for too long they tried to get themselves out of it with tough isolation basketball. Start the third quarter and through the end of the fourth, or the first 10 minutes of the fourth quarter, they played really good ball, just moving the ball well, getting everyone involved. But then they went back to that isolation ball, and that's not the way this Celtics team digs out of holes. But you know, it happens. They do it from time to time, and tonight it just got the best of them.
Yeah, I saw a lot of that. Stand around and watch Kyrie Irving, pull some magic out of his ass, which seemed to be, the strategy at certain points of the season last year with shall we name him Isaiah Thomas? I know Isaiah Thomas has been, another name has been through the ringer as of late, and I'm sure we'll talk about that later on in the show. But it seems that with the lead player on a team, minus, a second, go-to scorer that can really take over, these type of, can take over along with Kyrie Irving. It seems like these other guys are in a lot of situations are just sitting there watching Kyrie Irving. And then in some cases, Terry Rozier, and tonight was not Terry Rozier's night, just, isolation ball, dribbling to the hoop, getting contested shots and not making, getting double teamed, getting squished between two defenders, having to make really difficult shots and not pulling those shots out, or taking contested, jump shots, pull up jump shots that, are ill advised. It's just not the way the Boston Celtics, with their, ball movement, pass first, mentality type offense. That's not the way the Boston Celtics win games or come back. And that's exactly what I saw tonight, was a lot of, like, as you mentioned, isolation, hero basketball to, try to bring the, score all those 26 points in one shot. And that never works. They did bring it back. But, at the end of that game, when it got tight, the game reduced into that isolation basketball, watching Kyrie Irving, and it didn't necessarily work for them. Whereas the Pacers, Victor Oladipo did his thing, but the Pacers had fairly well distributed scoring for their part. The Celtics did as well, but I think the Pacers did slightly, maybe not better at it, but they had their shots. Miles Turner had a fantastic game as well. Especially
right.
In the clutch, in the opening quarter, in the opening quarters, and then down the stretch in the fourth quarter. So tough game.
Right.
Celtics just couldn't pull it out.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And Tom Westerholm of Math Live tweeted out in the middle of the game that Kyrie still doesn't look right. Like he was hurt. He missed three games with that injured quad that he suffered against Denver a couple weeks ago or last week. And his shot's been real flat. That, when he isolates the wing and does that one dribble step back to his right, that was real flat tonight, hitting the front of the rim every time. So I think they were leaning really heavily on a guy who might not be 100% healthy to dig them out of a hole when they just didn't need to do that. I mean, Jaylen Brown had a really good third quarter. Al Horford had a decent game. Tatum had a decent game. But, I mean, you live by Kyrie, die by Kyrie. In a game like this, you die by Kyrie, but there's no need to in – the Celtics, you'd think the amount of success they've had moving the ball this year, that they would realize that. But when you're down 26, when you're fighting in the end, you do what works. And for them, a lot of this year, that's been Kyrie. But you look at a game like they had last night against Washington, where a bunch of guys closed it out. Kyrie played a big part, but you had a Jaylen Brown, that move in the left corner. I don't know. I saw a lot more isolation ball tonight than I wanted. Marcus Morris took a bunch of ISO shots. But like I said, you get down 26.
That's all he does.
Yeah. Everyone has a plan to get punched in the mouth, and it seemed like the Celtics plan kind of went out the window a couple times tonight.
Yeah, they got punched in the mouth several times. They, to come back from 26 points and take, a lead, albeit a one-point lead, to take that punch in the mouth and then kind of then just get, run out, towards the, at the end of the game. But speaking to your point of the isolation ball and the lack of ball movement that typifies the Brad Stevens offense, but that we didn't get to see tonight from the Boston Celtics. At one point during the NBC Sports Boston broadcast, Mike Gorman mentioned that. And this was literally, I believe, almost halfway through the first half, somewhere not halfway through the second quarter, that there had been only four assists by the Boston Celtics, and all four of them came by Kyrie Irving. So naturally, I opened up my computer and checked the box score at halftime, and at halftime, there were 5 assists by the Boston Celtics, 4 by Kyrie Irving, and 1 from my man Moose, the new addition to the Boston Celtics, who only got, I believe, 11 points of playing time tonight, you know, had, you know, not much of an effect on this game, but who I think will prove down the line to be a valuable asset and a valuable addition to this team. He's just running out there basically running, you know, your basic, you know, 1-2-3s and ABCs of big man play, you know, setting picks and then rolling to the basket and grabbing rebounds and trying to put them back. He wasn't very successful tonight. He had a better game, I think, last night against Detroit in his debut against Detroit. But we can probably talk about Moose a little bit later as well. But just to, you know, make that point, you know, again, first half, 5 assists, 4 by Kyrie and 1 by Greg Monroe, who is an underrated passing big man, but still, you don't want those to be, you don't want 5 assists at halftime for the Boston Celtics, and 4 of them coming from one player, you know, and there just needs to be more ball movement than that. I think if you looked at some of the box scores from the games leading up to this one, you would have seen a lot more ball movement. I remember the game on the infamous Super Bowl Sunday when the Boston Celtics, I forgot who they played that day because it was you know that Sunday game. And I talked to Rui and Calvin Chamberlain about the amount of assists that, you know, they mentioned how, yeah, Al Horford had played a lot of center, point center, and then but when you look down the box score, like the entire starting five had, you know, 5 assists or 4 assists right down the line. So everybody was passing. In this game, you look at the box score, and aside from, you know, Kyrie Irving, not many people were passing the ball tonight.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, like you said, you mentioned the box score. If you look at the assists, it was Kyrie with 5, Al with 4. Rozier had 3, and a couple guys had 1. But besides that, there's just,
yep,
there's just a lack of assists tonight. They only had 16 on the entire game, and I obviously that's an issue in a Brad system or in a Brad Stevens system where it is so predicated on ball movement. Obviously Isaiah played a little bit different in Brad's system last year and they had some success, but I don't know. I think this week was tough. They had 3 games in 4 nights, and I really think you saw a tired team after a 3-game stretch last week that was so demanding, and you got Kyrie back, who I think is still a little bit banged up, Marcus Morris back, and I think you're looking at a team who probably had to exert a ton of energy last week to win without their best scorer and another scorer off the bench, and you know, you see the result with 2 losses in 3 games. Obviously, I'm not going to overreact because I've seen the Celtics go on these stretches where they play poorly and then they win 5 or 6 games in a row. So it is what it is. Obviously, a win tonight would have been nice, but like we've been saying, it's tough to dig your way out of 20-plus point holes every single night.
And that seems to be a habit of the Boston Celtics. And if you look back at those aforementioned games that they've played, you know, a tough blowout loss to the Toronto Raptors, and then an overtime win, you know, a squeaker in Washington against the Wizards. I mean, you know, these were not easy games. These are all, and then of course tonight against the Indiana Pacers. All of these are playoff teams in the Eastern Conference. You know what I mean? That, you know, have very talented players. Victor Oladipo, you know, if we couldn't see it, you know, in Orlando or his brief time in Oklahoma City, you know, you can definitely see it now that, you know, he's the clear-cut leader of a team. You know, he's the guy on that team, and he's very impressive. This stuff that he does out there was, you know, I mean, he's right up there. He won, you know, the battle of the point guards tonight, and that was going to be one of the topics I mentioned in the upcoming segment, the keys to the game. And we might as well just go ahead and do that, Taylor. If you have anything in mind, I'll start off with my keys to the game, and then you can throw out yours. I picked 3 things. I like to do this occasionally on the show. And with that, I'm going to kick off the little intro to the keys to the game, and then I'll let you guys know what I thought were the 3 keys to this game, and I'm sure Taylor has some ideas as well to why the Boston Celtics did not come out victorious tonight, losing to the Indiana Pacers at home by a score of 97-91. And with that, we'll get to the keys of the game. I got the keys.
keys, keys, keys.
And the three keys that I saw tonight in this game, aside from the topics already mentioned or the issues already mentioned by Taylor and I, as we broke down and analyzed the gameplay itself, and I'll put these in order of, you know, maybe no particular order, but a general order, maybe least to most important, rebounding. We know that the Boston Celtics have been, even throughout some of their bad stretches, have been, if not a fantastic rebounding team, at least a decent rebounding team in their bad stretches. But tonight they got out-rebounded badly by the Indiana Pacers, who really don't have any reason to be out-rebounding the Boston Celtics. It's not like they have so much more size than the Boston Celtics, and it's not like their guards, Victor Oladipo, I believe, had 10 rebounds. I believe that was his double-double was in rebounds and not assists. 10 rebounds. Boston Celtics have rebounding guards as well. Terry Rozier is a rebounding guard. I know Marcus Smart is out and he gets, you know, rebounds himself. But 53 rebounds for the Indiana Pacers to 38 for the Boston Celtics. That's completely unlike the Boston Celtics, especially when you had Aron Baynes getting, you know, reasonable minutes, getting significant minutes, 21 minutes tonight, which I believe is a couple of ticks above his average, you know, 6 points and six rebounds for him. He did his job. But when you add to the mix, you know, a guy like Greg Monroe, who, you know, in seasons past when certain CLNS media personalities, myself included, would talk about Greg Monroe, it was usually to address, you know, the rebounding issues that the Boston Celtics used to have, and possibly putting a solid five next to Al Horford, who's been requesting to play the four. But Monroe's still working himself into, you know, the Boston Celtics system, still learning the system. Only two games of the Boston Celtics, didn't really give much in rebounding. Although, given his minutes, I believe he only played 11 minutes off the bench for Greg Monroe and had four rebounds, so he did his part. Marcus Morris also with seven boards, Al Horford with eight, but again, you know, 53 rebounds to 38 for the Boston Celtics, inexcusable. Even worse than that, field goal shooting. We mentioned that earlier, Taylor. The Indiana Pacers shot 45% from the field for the game. The Boston Celtics shot 39%, but for the first two quarters, the first half, it was even worse than that. As I mentioned in the initial, you know, summary of the game, there was a point where the Boston Celtics were shooting as low as, you know, 21-22% from the field, while the Indiana Pacers, I keep wanting to call them the Indianapolis Pacers, I don't know why, while the Indiana Pacers were shooting near 60%. You can't do that. You can't shoot 20% while your opponent shoots 60% and go down by 26 points and expect to win the game. And then my final point, and I mentioned it again, Victor Oladipo just outplayed Kyrie Irving tonight. I think, Taylor, your point about Kyrie Irving probably being injured, the Boston Celtics relying a little bit too much on a guy who may not be 100% right now, is probably, you know, affecting the game. But Victor Oladipo, 35 points, 10 rebounds, 5 steals, 2 assists. He also had 5 turnovers, which is, you know, never a good thing. Kyrie Irving only, quote-unquote only, is still a nice performance, but 21 points, 5 assists, 2 rebounds, and 2 turnovers from Kyrie Irving, just completely overshadowed by Victor Oladipo, who was basically having his way, doing whatever it was that he wanted out on the court tonight. Not sure how effective Marcus Smart would have been defending Victor Oladipo. I'm sure he would have disrupted something, but Victor Oladipo just looks really fast out there, and he's shifty and has all those moves that I just don't know if, you know, even a guy like Marcus Smart would be able to keep up with him. That's a guy that a guy like Avery Bradley would be a solid defender against. And Terry Rozier isn't quite there yet, and Kyrie Irving's not known for the defense. So Victor Oladipo just basically ran roughshod over the Boston Celtics backcourt. How about you, Taylor? What were your keys? I mean, you don't have to stick with three if you have, you know, four or five or yeah, only two. You know, it's all good. You have as many keys as you want, you know. However big your keychain, you know, however many keys your keychain can fit, you know, go ahead and run with it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not Future, so I do not have the keys, but I have a couple. you just mentioned it, but I think tonight, in the last two or three weeks since Marcus Smart's been out, I think tonight, more so than all the other games, the Celtics really missed him, because Oladipo, you know, he had 35 points with 10 boards on, you know, 51.7% from the field. Like, Marcus Smart, if he's out there, he's probably going to, you know, pick up Oladipo in crunch time. And instead of Oladipo attacking a not superb defender, Kyrie Irving, he's going to be attacking a very good defender, Marcus Smart. So I think that probably changes something. And I think they missed him more tonight than they have, you know, since he messed his hand up in L.A. I already talked about these two things, but I think just digging holes for yourself, especially 26 points, is just it's not necessarily a key, but it's just you can't do that in the win basketball games. You can't do that. And another thing I already talked about is just a lot of isolation ball, taking bad shots and trying to dig yourself out of holes with bad shots. Like I said, that doesn't work. But one thing that kind of frustrated me tonight is, and it happens a lot, Jaylen Brown will go on these runs, and he'll be playing very good basketball, and all of a sudden, he'll just disappear. Like, Brad will take him out of the game, or he'll stop getting the ball, but it happens a lot. And, you know, tonight in the third quarter, I retweeted two tweets, and they were both like, oh my God, Jaylen Brown's taking the leap. Like, he's turning into the superstar we think, or he isn't showing flashes of superstardom that, like, we're used to, or they were expecting. But then all of a sudden, he's on the bench, and he doesn't get the ball. Like, tonight he played 28 minutes, which is only 3 minutes less than his standard 31 and a half minutes a game. But still, it's like this guy's on a run in the third quarter. I don't get why we're taking him out of the game, especially when we're trying to – when the Celtics are trying to dig out of this hole. It happens in Jaylen more so than anyone. Like, Jason Tatum played 35 minutes tonight, and Jaylen Brown was the one out there playing very well, and he only played 28 minutes. I appreciate Brad's dedication, his rotations, because I think come playoff time, guys will get their minutes bumped up, and it'll probably help them that they've been saved throughout the year. But when you're trying to dig out of these games, I mean, these games are big proving grounds for guys like Jaylen Brown. I would have loved to have seen him, you know, instead of Tatum getting the 35 minutes, like play him 33 and Jaylen 33 and just let them go to work and try to dig themselves out of a hole instead of playing this ISO ball where you're shooting three-pointers over wings. Let Jaylen penetrate and take that free throw jumper he takes, that free throw line jumper, or let him get to the rim because that was working. Instead of taking him and throwing him on the bench for 10 minutes while the lead, you know, it stays at two forever, like, let Jaylen keep affecting the game. Like I said, like, it'll probably work on the end, and I obviously trust Brad Stevens. He's the coach of the year at this point. But stuff like that has frustrated me all season long, and it frustrated me tonight.
Boy, I couldn't agree more because I am a huge Jaylen Brown fan. I think Jaylen Brown has so much potential and so much promise on both sides of the ball. It's just and when he goes on those runs, those streaks that, you know, like that you mentioned, it's a beautiful thing to watch because he's so dialed in, not just offensively, and he makes certain moves that, you know, one of the biggest criticisms of Jaylen Brown has been his handles, and we saw a couple of times in the first half where, you know, he was trying to dribble the ball to the top of the key or, you know, on the perimeter to make his, you know, first initial move to get past his defender, and he ended up losing the ball. I don't think he got much help from his teammates either as he was, you know, getting pushed back further and further by his defender away from, you know, from his, you know, goal of driving the ball. But, you know, when his first step is on, he has a deadly first step, and he can finish at the hoop, and then he plays so extremely hard and dialed in and tuned in on the defensive end. I really think Jaylen Brown is one of those fantastic is going to be a fantastic – he already is a fantastic player, but he has the potential to be a very, very special player for the Boston Celtics. And I'm a little bit disappointed with all the injuries in the Eastern Conference, and not to say that, you know, Kristaps Porzingis being the latest injury to the Eastern Conference All-Stars, and I believe Kemba Walker being named the replacement for Kristaps Porzingis. There was a tweet a couple of weeks back, I'm not sure if you remember this, Taylor, when Draymond Green was actively lobbying on Twitter for Jaylen Brown to be an Eastern Conference All-Star, saying that he deserved a look or a shot to be an Eastern Conference All-Star. And three injured Eastern Conference All-Stars, you know, later, and three replacements later, and Jaylen Brown is still on the outside looking in. Not that you would necessarily expect it, and not that, you know, you wouldn't give the nod maybe to, you know, some of the other, you know, more veteran players or whatever, but I really think Jaylen Brown has that potential. It's just that, you know, when he gets benched like he did tonight, as you mentioned, and for some reason in many games when he gets, you know, sat down, he kind of, you know, as tuned in or dialed in as he is when he's on the court, he kind of dials out. And, you know, to a degree, you know, I think it's, you know, on Brad Stevens to kind of realize, you know, the hot man. And I think he does, but he obviously he has his reasons. And far be it from either one of us, of course, to question the genius that is, you know, Brad Stevens' coaching and Brad Stevens' rotations. He has a reason for doing it. But at the same time, you'd like, you know, the recognition that, you know, Jaylen Brown is on fire. Jaylen Brown is, you know, doing good things out there. Maybe give him more than the, you know, 28 minutes or whatever it was that he got, you know, tonight. It's not a Malcolm Butler, you know, a benching for the Super Bowl. But it's, you know, one of those things to let the guy out there and, you know, go play.
I do not want to talk about that. Let's refrain from any Malcolm Butler talk.
I've tried to refrain from any Patriots talk. I'm not just a Celtics fan. I'm from Massachusetts, so, you know, I'm a fan of the Bruins are, you know, giving us hope. The Celtics, not after tonight was, you know, an aberration, but the Celtics, I believe Celtics nation, Celtics fanhood has reason to be excited about this Boston Celtics team, especially after seeing what just happened with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And maybe that's a good, you know, point to transition if you want to transition to the to some trade deadline talk. If we can continue talking the game, whatever. But I think there's reason to be hopeful for the Boston Celtics. They have a shot at contending this year. They have a shot of making it to the front. And we've seen how they match up with the Golden State Warriors. They're not losing any of the players that they've had when they played the Golden State Warriors to two very, you know, to one game that they won and then a very close loss. They haven't lost anybody. Marcus Smart will be back. Gordon Hayward could be back. So, you know, there's a chance for the Boston Celtics this year. So they obviously give us, you know, reason for hope. The Boston Bruins give us reason for hope. As a Patriots fan, I tried to avoid sports media for the, you know, for the week after that loss,
yep,
because I already know what the narrative was going to be. But the comparison, I think, is not legitimate in any way, shape, or form. But sometimes it is a mystery, isn't it, why Brad Stevens, you know, makes those rotation calls the way that he does when he has a guy like Jaylen Brown out there, you know, circling it all the way back to Jaylen Brown. When there's a guy like Jaylen Brown out there just ready to, you know, tear it up.
It just always feels like it's Jaylen. Like, a couple weeks ago when the Celtics played the Warriors on that Saturday night game, I can't remember who it was, but they tweeted out, it's like, oh, Jaylen's having a good first half. Expect him to just disappear for the entire second half. And I just feel like it happens to him more so than any other player. And is that partially his own doing? Yeah, of course. Like, he does have consistency issues. That's always been a knock on him for 2 years. But,
yes,
like, in the past 10 games, in February even, like, he's playing really, really well. And I would have expected him, in a game where they're making this run to get back, just to, instead of Tatum getting those minutes, or he and Tatum can play the same minutes, obviously, like we've seen, like their starting lineup has Tatum and Brown in it. I don't know. It's frustrating to see Jaylen Brown playing so well and immediately just get taken and put on the bench. But it is what it is, and if you want to get into some trade deadline talk, I'm all for it.
Yeah, and I agree with you completely. I think that, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, we expect sports to be, you know, a meritocracy. You play well, you get playing time, right? You know, I mean, unless there's somebody playing better than you. And I think it's twofold also, just to, you know, close out, you know, just to finish off this talk of, you know, Jaylen Brown and it seeming like, you know, consistently being Jaylen Brown, whereas it's not Jason Tatum. I know a lot of people, and, you know, I read, you know, some of the tweets. I'm not as active on Twitter, but I do read, you know, a lot of the tweets. I'm definitely not as connected as you are, and I think that's to my disadvantage because you have all this, you know, awesome information at your fingertips, and I'm not quite as plugged into the Twitter sphere as maybe I should be, because there's all these awesome quotes and stuff, and I'm glad. That's why I enjoy working with you, because you have some of the, you know, this stuff there. But if the Twitter sphere or Twitterverse is noticing it and tweeting about it, I've noticed it on, you know, some of the Instagram fan pages, on some of the Facebook fan groups. You know, it's something that people have noticed. You know what I mean? That when Jaylen Brown seems to, you know, get pulled, and there also seems to be the opinion that I've gathered that the majority of Boston Celtics fans seem to think that Jason Tatum already is, or will be, a better player than Jaylen Brown. And while I think he could possibly, I don't like the comparison because they're both, you know, our players, they're both Boston Celtics players. But and while I think there is a potential, you can see flashes of Jason Tatum potentially, you know, having a broader, you know, set of offensive, you know, talents than Jaylen Brown heading forward. I think Jaylen Brown right now, even with his consistency issues, is probably a little bit better of a player, of an overall player than Jason Tatum. I think he's a better, you know, clamp man-to-man, you know, put, you know, lockdown defender, whereas Jason Tatum is, you know, a nice, you know, help defender, a nice chase down block defender, but not really someone that shuts down like Jaylen Brown. But to compound everything, I think the two of them play so well together that when you take Jaylen Brown out of the game, I think it also takes a little bit away from Jason Tatum. When you can get the two of them rolling the way they were earlier in the season, when they were having that, you know, that breakout after Gordon Hayward was injured and the Celtics fans didn't know where the team was going to go, it was those two guys really having breakout, you know, performances. Jason Tatum exceeding rookie expectations, and Jaylen Brown, you know, not having a sophomore slump and really taking that next step that got everybody excited and, you know, and allowed for that long, what was it, 17-game streak that the Boston Celtics went on. And I think Brad Stevens would be, you know, not that I should ever give him advice, but I think, you know, and, you know, that's something to consider, having those two when they're both, you know, in sync and when they're both locked in. I think you have a special dynamic that's greater than the sum of his parts. But that's just, you know, my feelings about those two situations. If we want, we can go ahead and transition to a little bit of that that trade deadline talk. Boston Celtics, not very active at the trade deadline, did sign my guy Moose Monroe. I've been talking about Moose for a couple of years now, of Moose possibly coming to Boston, and it finally happened. I think Danny waited for the right time and the right price, and got added a presence that the Boston Celtics didn't have, added a dimension the Boston Celtics didn't have before, which is a low post score on the block. Underrated passing big man, which obviously they already have a decent passing big man in Al Horford, but a very solid rebounder, and I also believe an underrated defender. He doesn't protect the rim all that well, but as I've scouted Moose over the past couple of years and lobbying to get him to Boston, I've noted that he averages, I believe, a career, you know, one steal per game, and that's even with the terrible years that he's had with Milwaukee and Phoenix, where he's been used to minimal degree, you know, about averaging about a steal per game, and that is by poking away, you know, players backing him down on the block and denying the entrance pass on the block when he's, you know, defending players. So, you know, blocks themselves, getting blocked shots, you know, rim protection is a very nice thing to have. And I think Greg Monroe does alter shots. He just doesn't get those blocked shots. But actually stealing the ball, blocks aren't always steals. Sometimes blocks go out of bounds and the possession goes back to the other team, who can inbound it and make a shot. But a steal implicitly, you know, implies, you know, the ball changed possession, and Greg Monroe is good at that, and I don't think a lot of his detractors have realized that. And now that he's in green, I see a lot of people getting, you know, excited about him, whereas before, the concept of Moose in Boston was kind of poo-pooed. He doesn't fit with Brad Stevens' system. But what do you think about Moose? I'd like to – I don't think I've ever got your take on Moose, Taylor. So we'll start with the deadline talk, with the one signing the Boston Celtics did make, and that's Moose Monroe. What do you think about Moose? What do you think about the signing? What does it bring to the Celtics, and how does he fit into Brad Stevens' system, where he kind of likes to have more shooting bigs, and that's not what Greg Monroe is?
Yeah, I mean, I think Bobby talks about this a lot, that he's not the biggest fan of small ball, and he does have a solid center in the middle. And I generally agree. Like, I do appreciate small ball because, you know, I'm a huge LeBron fan. I've watched every finals game for the past 3 years, so I see exactly how small ball works with the Golden State Warriors. But I think Greg Monroe will fit pretty well because, like everyone's talking about, like, he is a very good passer. He's another big body. He's young. He's only 27 years old. I think he can relieve some of Aaron Baines' minutes because Baines started. I think you're just seeing a natural toll on his body, like a guy that big running up and down the floor. I think getting another body in there, relieve him of some of those minutes, will be nice. All year long, I've been talking about to try to get Nerlens Noel a buyout because I like how athletic he is. I like the idea of a big rim-running center. Like, I like Andre Jordan type. I like what JaVale McGee provides for the Warriors when he comes off the bench. I like that big center rim runs and catches lobs. Like, it's just, I think it works perfectly in today's NBA. Monroe's not necessarily that, but I think he fits into what Brad does, especially a lot of their half-court sets. And, you know, like you said, I think he's a very pretty good defender. He rebounds pretty well, but I think the biggest asset he'll provide is low block scoring and just his ability to pass out of the paint.
Man, wow. Excellent analysis. I agree with that completely. And I think that, like you mentioned, passing out of the paint, you know, underrated passer. He averages, I think, close to a couple of assists per game. I mean, it's tough to gauge his career stats because of what's been happening to his career in the past, you know, recently. But, you know, he's enough of a threat in the low block with his low post scoring that he causes defenses to collapse, which then, of course, opens up the, you know, perimeter game for the, you know, multitude of perimeter threats. The Boston Celtics have Kyrie Irving. Terry Rozier is emerging as a decent perimeter threat. You know, Jaylen Brown can, you know, shoot the three. Jason Tatum at one point led the league in three-point shooting. I don't think he does anymore, and I don't think he has for a while now. But, you know, it's you know, there are three-point shooters on this Boston Celtics team, and they have a guy that can, you know, suck in the defense, draw in the defense, and open up those things, and have the ability to pass out of those situations that good. I think he has very soft hands for a big man. So I'm happy. I've been lobbying for Greg Monroe. I think the $17 to $18 million max deal he signed with the Bucks was not, you know, even though that's when I started talking about him, because Danny showed interest in him as a free agent before he went to the Bucks. Just clearly Danny wasn't going to pay him that $17 to $18 million coming out of Detroit as a free agent. But, you know, ended up, you know, circling all the way back around to get him for What was his contract?
$5 million.
$5 million for a year. So, you know, for half a year, I guess it is. Your half a year rental is not bad. And then I've heard, you know, keeping it Celtics, and then I guess we can expand out to the other teams that, you know, in the conference or in the league. I've heard talk now the Boston Celtics, having not made any moves at the trade deadline, you know, a lot of fans wanted a Lou Williams or Tyreke Evans, another scorer off the bench, you know, versatile scorer off the bench like Tyreke Evans or a volume scorer like Lou Williams, are now looking at the buyout market. And it has been reported by multiple sources now, and I'm sure you know who I'm going to say, that there's mutual interest between Joe Johnson coming back to Boston. I'm not sure how if you're still a sophomore in college, probably don't remember, but maybe Joe Johnson was the 10th overall pick by the Boston Celtics in 2001, and then traded to Phoenix halfway through his rookie season, possibly looking to come back as a buyout free agent to the Boston Celtics to add depth to the Boston Celtics roster. I believe he's averaging 7 points and 2.5 or 3 rebounds this season. Not the greatest of seasons, but, you know, ISO Joe could give the Boston Celtics, you know, a little bit of a punch off the bench. What do you think about Joe Johnson? Any interest there on your behalf for our Joe Johnson's, you know, All-Star years? He's, I believe, a 7-time All-Star. I'm not positive. Maybe not 7 times, but he's a several-time All-Star. Were ISO Joe's best days too far in the past for you to really remember anything about them? I almost don't remember them myself. But what do you think about ISO Joe Johnson?
I think Joe Johnson is a solid basketball player, and I remember him, like, I was obviously too young for the Celtics, too young for even Phoenix even, but I remember him in Atlanta and Brooklyn and everywhere he's been since. I think he'd be a nice piece. You know, he's older, so I think a nice veteran presence would be decent. I don't know if he would be willing to – or I think he'd be open to signing with Boston, but I think he's more likely to sign with a Golden State or whatever. You know, he's on the last legs of his career, and if he really wants to get that ring, he's probably going to sign somewhere like that where it's probably more, you know, conducive for a veteran to step in and, you know, play 18 minutes off the bench or whatever. And, you know, I think the Celtics, I don't know if he'd have a huge role here. The role he wanted, or, you know, the opportunity to win a championship. You know, Joe Johnson is who he is. I think he'd bring something to the Celtics. I've also seen talks of, you know, maybe looking at a Marco Bellinelli for some 3-point shooting. I don't know if the Celtics will be active on the buyout market. I don't think they're going to go after Noel if he does get bought out like I had hoped. But, you know, I think Joe Johnson would add something to the Celtics. What that is, I'm not sure. I think Bellinelli would obviously add some shooting. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But I don't see anyone out there on the buyout market that could really, really put the Celtics over the top, you know, and make them, you know, with tonight's loss, they dropped to number 2 in the Eastern Conference. I don't see anyone on the buyout market that could make them the number 1 team in the East, like, you know, with no question.
Yeah, the clear-cut, you know, clear-cut favorite to be the number 1 team. I've been a big fan of Nerlens Noel as well in the past. I'm glad that you brought him up. He is actually a Boston kid. I believe he's from Everett. So, you know, a Boston area kid, I should say. It would be nice to have him on the team, but I think that, you know, given the inability of Aaron Baines to shoot from further than, 10 and 15 feet, and the inability of Greg Monroe. I mean, he has an all right elbow shooter, but, you don't really want to, expect. Adding Nerlens Noel, who also is not, it doesn't have much of an outside touch at all, having three players of that type, that are relatively unidimensional on offense. I know Nerlens Noel is an outstanding, or used to be at one point, a very solid defensive player, rim protecting defensive player. Not not a very big, not very big for a big man, but definitely with the timing, blocking shots, long arms length, great timing, probably could be had for a reasonable salary. Still a young player. I know he's been injured several times, but. I haven't heard any rumblings of that sort. It seems to be the only real sourced information that I've seen on the internet today has been the Joe Johnson story. Before I get to these reads, because we do have to pay some bills, let's talk about the rest of the league and how maybe that, or at least the rest of the Eastern Conference, and maybe how that's going to affect the race for the number one seed. Since we just were talking about the number one seed, the Cleveland Cavaliers. Completely cleaning house. The no question left in the minds of anybody with half a brain or even a quarter of a brain or even a brain cell that the Boston Celtics got the best of the Cleveland Cavaliers in the Kyrie for IT trade. Isaiah Thomas no longer being with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Jay Crowder no longer being with the Cleveland Cavaliers. The only thing the Cleveland Cavaliers have left from the Kyrie Irving trade that they got from the Boston Celtics is, I believe, Ante Zizic. If they haven't cut him already, I haven't heard a single thing about Ante Zizic all season, and I'm not really all that interested in hearing anything about Ante Zizic, but I do wish the man... Say what now?
He was on their bench tonight. He played, so...
He played, and they did get to keep their Brooklyn Nets pick. They sent Isaiah Thomas out to the Lakers, got back Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance. That in basically what's a roster clearing move for the Lakers. We all know the theory that the Lakers are going to make a run at LeBron James and possibly also Paul George in the off season. But keeping it, Dwayne Wade was traded for a. What was it, conditional or protected second-round pick? I didn't even know they had such a thing as a protected second-round pick to Miami. And then, of course, they swapped Jay Crowder for Rodney Hood straight up. I don't know why the Jazz would do that, but, they did it. And I believe somehow George Hill was included in the three-team trade. So you get rid of Jay Crowder, just to sum it up, Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, Dwayne Wade from the Cleveland Cavaliers, and you bring in Jordan Clarkson, Larry Nance Jr., George Hill, and who am I? And Rodney Hood.
Rodney Hood.
Does this make the Cleveland Cavaliers better or worse in your opinion, Taylor?
Just adding in, they did get rid of Channing Frye, Derrick Rose, and their first round pick for 2018. Just throw that stuff.
Yes, that's right. Derrick Rose and Channing Frye.
Yeah. I think it makes them better. I think if it doesn't make them better, it makes them younger and more athletic, and that was their biggest problem. Everyone talks about how bad their defense was. Bad defense. Bad defense. Bad defense. Well, you had a 5'9" guy who is a bad defender to start, but also he's got a hip injury, so that hurts your defense. And then you had a bunch of old guys. So I think this move, especially Clarkson, Nance, they're relatively young. They're 23, 24 years old. Rodney Hood isn't old, and George Hill's not a good defender, and he's kind of a little bit older. But I think this move, I think you get more guys who – it sounds dumb, but like I think LeBron's always had a big problem playing with egos. Because his ego is huge. So you put a guy like IT on the team with him, and IT, even though he's 5'9", even though whatever, he still scored 30 points last year, and he's got a big personality, he's got a big voice. So I think if you take that away and you add these four guys who – Rodney Hood's the only one who's ever had any sort of problems. Like, there's been some consistency issues in Utah. But I think you put these four guys who will all hustle and all at least try on the defensive end. George Hill's questionable, but – at least try on the defensive end. I think you put him with LeBron. I think it makes their team better. I think it makes their team younger in case LeBron does leave. They didn't have to trade the Brooklyn pick, which is very nice. But something I saw on Twitter yesterday, it said the important thing the Cavs got back in this trade, or not got back, but got in general, is that LeBron's going to be back for LeBron. You could see, I watch a lot of Cavs games. Like I said, like LeBron's probably my favorite basketball player, one of my favorite athletes. So I watched almost all the Cavs games, and you could see LeBron just get being dejected. You know, he was still putting up his normal numbers, still playing really well, but you could see just, like, the disappointment on his face, just the, oh, my God, like, this is trash on his face. And I think what we're going to see is he's posted a triple-double 2 nights ago, another triple-double tonight. I think we're going to start to see this LeBron again, and this LeBron is bad news for the Eastern Conference.
I agree with that. I think you're going to see a, you know, there never was a question. I mean, obviously, no matter how much of a chip on his shoulder or you know, Napoleonic complex Isaiah Thomas may have had, there was never any question that this was LeBron James' team. But those egos and the clash of egos kind of, you know, wasn't conducive to him leading the team. You know, he was the leader. He was the number one guy. That was never in doubt. But there are certain, you know, situations that, you know, that lead to that. And I think I agree with you on that. That, you know, having players, and I guarantee you, at least a couple of these young guys coming in there, Jordan Clarkson or Larry Nance, you know, looked up to LeBron James as they were, you know, going through high school or whatever else it is. He's probably their favorite player as well. So they're going to defer to Isaiah Thomas. They're going to refer to LeBron James a lot more than a guy like Isaiah Thomas, who just literally left a team that, you know, their entire culture at the moment is based around not fearing, you know, LeBron James, not fearing, you know, these big name teams, and overachieving, meaning the Boston Celtics, you know, overachieving in what they're doing. So I agree with you that, you know, the biggest thing coming out of this is that LeBron James now has, you know, teammates that, you know, he can now be the Pied Piper to a, you know, team with more young talent that will look up to him and listen to him and follow his lead, or we assume so, you know, given who LeBron James is. And you also get rid of some of the, you know, unfortunate toxic elements of the, you know, locker room. And I don't think it was just Isaiah Thomas. I think you had a couple of players, and I believe Jay Crowder was, you know, from what I've heard, is probably one of the unhappy guys there that wasn't, you know, a big fan of the situation and what happened. Whether that was due to LeBron James, and I'm sure part of it probably was, or, you know, due to the situation of, you know, being traded, or due to whatever, it just wasn't a good fit for a lot of those players that were there. The Dwayne Wade, you know, removal is the only one that, you know, makes me question it somewhat, as maybe kind of a dig at LeBron by the Cavs ownership or whatever it is. But I think in the end, you're absolutely correct. You know, being younger and solving the ego problem, it's going to take them, I think, a while to develop chemistry. And I think one of the negatives of that trade for the Cleveland Cavaliers is this is a team that wants to compete for championships. And while they may still come through the Eastern Conference, I think the further you get, I mean, you got to think, Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance Jr., these guys have not been, you know what I'm saying? I don't even know if they've ever been to the playoffs. I don't think so. And if they have, maybe with yeah, I don't think, yeah, no, I'm not, I can't recall. I don't think they've even been to the playoffs. So as you get into these, you know, these games deeper into the playoffs, LeBron's going to need somebody to hit those shots. You know what I mean? And these guys have no experience. This is one of the reasons why last season some fans, you know, going to the Eastern Conference tonight, you know, you're not going to beat the, you know, the Cavs, so why even bother? Well, because you get a guy like Jaylen Brown experience. You get a guy like Jason Terry experience in games that, you know, you can't simulate in any other way. And that's experience that, you know, while they may have been old and terrible and had no chemistry and ego problems, those players did have those experiences, and now LeBron has a lot of teammates that don't have that experience. And I think experience counts when it comes to situations like that, and I wouldn't be surprised if that experience were the difference in a series between, you know, whether it's the Celtics and the Cavs, or the Raptors and the Cavs, or the Wizards and the Cavs. You know what I mean? All those right. teams have had, you know, significant experience. But, of course, so is LeBron James. And that's the ultimate, you know, the ultimate factor in many cases if you're a LeBron fan. So there's, you know, pluses and minuses, but I agree with your assessment, you know, pretty much for the most part. I still like the Celtics over the Cavs, though, in an objective way, not just in a fan way. In a fan way, too, but in
right.
an objective
and I think,
way.
I think the trade deadline makes Sunday's game a whole lot more interesting for a couple reasons. One, the whole Isaiah Thomas, you know, video tribute, whatever about that never needed to happen because he won't even be on the team when the Cavs come on Sunday.
Yep.
When they retire Paul Pierce's jersey. But I think Sunday's game is going to be really interesting. Clarkson, Nance Jr., Hood, and Hill didn't play tonight. Obviously, they were acquired yesterday, so, you know, it just shit like that happens where they don't play. But tonight, or on Sunday, they should all be out there. So I think it'll be really interesting, especially with LeBron, who's coming off 2 triple-doubles in a row. The Celtics beat the hell out of him last time. I think we're going to see, you know, that killer, that Game 6 2012 LeBron. I think Sunday will be a really big test for the Celtics, and I think it'll be a big test for the Cavs, and I think we'll get a good read on, you know, how it's going to be for the rest of the year. One thing I am excited about from the trade deadline is that the Raptors didn't do anything big. They traded Bruno Caboclo, or however you say his last name, to the Sacramento for Syracuse's Malachi Richardson. Out of that, they didn't do a whole lot, and there was talk about them maybe getting DeAndre Jordan. Coley from Mixtape was talking about them getting DeAndre Jordan. That would have scared me. But, you know, they didn't do a whole lot. They're number one seed in the East as after the Celtics lost tonight, but they didn't make any huge moves at the deadline, which makes me feel better. So I think this makes the East real interesting, the Cavs trade.
Yeah, and I think it makes the two teams, just to finish up the Cavaliers talk, I think it makes the two teams, like, more reflective of each other. They're now younger teams, you know, with younger talent, athletic talent. You know, Larry Nance and Jordan Clarkson are, you know, fairly athletic players. You know what I mean? It's younger athletic teams led by, and Kyrie Irving is by no means old. He's nowhere near as old as LeBron James, but he is a veteran and he is a champion. You know what I mean? So you have two teams with, you know, veteran champion leaderships and a bunch of, you know, young kids, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Larry Nance, Jordan Clarkson. You know what I mean? That, you know, it's definitely a different matchup now than it was before, an entirely different matchup. It's probably going to be more interesting games, more fun games to watch with the young talent that the Cleveland Cavaliers have, and just to watch as a basketball fan how LeBron James leads that young talent out onto the court against a team like the Boston Celtics, which has historically been his nemesis, and then is now, you know, so nipping at his heels, so to speak, to take over, you know, dominance in the Eastern Conference, because we're having all this discussion, and we have, you know, Gordon Hayward is still in the picture for, you know, if not this season, for the playoffs, and I really hope not, because I think it's better to play it safe, but, you know, definitely for next year, and that's just going to be insane, imagining this Boston Celtics team and adding Gordon Hayward without having to lose anything. But before we close up, we're gonna talk. I'd like to talk. We still have just under 10 minutes in the show left. I'd like to talk about. You mentioned the game on Sunday, which is February 11th. That's the Paul Pierce retirement jersey game. I'd like to talk a little bit about that. Maybe have, you know, a word or something about Paul Pierce. But we do have to pay some bills, and with that, I would like to mention that tonight's show is sponsored by RX Bar, and RX Bar is a whole food all-natural protein bar. What does that mean? Our bars are made with 100% whole ingredients. We want to be transparent and upfront with our customers, which is why we label the core ingredients, egg whites, dates, and nuts, on the front of the package, and ingredients that make up texture and taste on the back. For example, 100% real cacao, coconut, apple, etc. Beyond being a go-to snack that checks off a number of nutritional boxes, RX bars actually taste delicious. We found creating a bar made from real whole food ingredients actually tastes better than anything else out there. We don't need the fillers, the additives, the chemicals, or the added sugar. How did we start? In 2013, we called BS on protein bars. We couldn't find a bar out there that wasn't full of artificial ingredients, fillers, preservatives, and just general garbage, unnecessary additives that you don't need. That's why we set out to create a bar with a few simple, clean ingredients where every ingredient serves a purpose. RX Bar's core ingredients do all the talking. It's simply like eating 3 egg whites, 2 dates, and 6 almonds with no BS. So you get your protein from your nuts, from your egg whites, all in one, all natural. And it turns out real food ingredients actually taste really good. You can actually taste the cacao, and that's cacao, not caca, cacao, which is where chocolate comes from. You can taste the cacao, the real fruit, the spices like sea salt. Whether you like sweet or savory, chocolate or fruit flavors, there's an RX bar for you. RX bars come in 11 delicious flavor varieties, as the aforementioned cacao, coconut, apple spice, maple sea salt, which is my personal favorite, the maple sea salt. I like the savory flavors, like the sweet and the salty combined. RX bars are also gluten-free, soy-free, and dairy-free. So if you're one of these, you know, gluten on the non-gluten bandwagon, you actually believe you have celiac disease, one of the 1% of the population has celiac disease, and you can't eat gluten, these are perfect for you because they do not contain gluten. And there is no added sugar, so they don't cause you to get obese, although if you eat a whole bunch of protein, you may gain weight anyway, but those would be gains, the good gains, like the kind you get in the gym, not the kind you get from gaining unwanted weight. There's no artificial colors, artificial flavors, preservatives, or fillers. Egg whites are for protein. The dates bind. Dates, if you've ever eaten a date, they're kind of sticky. They bind the stuff together. And the nuts are for texture, because what better texture than nuts? A mouthful of nuts. RX bars are great for a number of occasions. Breakfast on the go, snack at the office, throw in your bag for the plane, toss in your backpack for a bike ride or hike, a pre- or post-workout snack for them aforementioned gains. Egg white protein stands out as a source of protein that is easy for your body to absorb. As I mentioned earlier, my favorite is the maple sea salt, savory, salty, all goodness in one. And we'd like to remind our listeners here at CLNS Media that you can get 25% off your first order if you visit rxbar.com/CLNS Media at checkout. That's rxbar.com/CLNSmedia.com. You get 25% off your first order. I believe that's the code. If it's not, you just go to RX Bar anyway. It's worth the price. And with that said, we're going to close up the show, Taylor and I, in the next few minutes. The toll-free call lines have been empty all night, but the RX Bar toll-free call lines, 347-215-7771, if you're listening and want to jump in real quick. Paul Pierce, the number 34, will never be worn by another player in Boston Celtics green, because Paul Pierce's number 34 will be raised to the rafters along with the 17 banners at TD Garden this Sunday, February 11th. I believe it is February 11th. At TD Garden. No Isaiah Thomas dedication or memorial or whatever video to distract from Paul Pierce's special day. Are you going to be attending the game? I'm sure somebody from CLNS Media will be in attendance to cover that. Do you plan on making it, Taylor McLeod, and how bad do you feel if you're not going? Is this one of those games that you'd really like to see? Because I sure wouldn't mind being in TD Garden to see this happen.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously wouldn't mind being there, but that's a six-hour drive on a Sunday. I have class the next day. You know, the trek from Syracuse to Boston is not an easy one. It's a straight shot, but it's pretty long ways, so I won't be there. I would love to be there, but yeah, I mean, I wrote a blog a couple years ago in like when Paul Pierce retired, and you know, Tom Brady, David Ortiz, and Paul Pierce were all like the pillars of my Boston sports fandom. You know, he was the first one to leave, so you know, he was the first Celtic that I really loved. You know, I started watching the Celtics in 2005-06 with my dad, and so you know, I was real young, but like in 2007-08 when they won a title, I was there, and Paul Pierce was the guy. So you know, it sucked when he left. I think he's gotten more love from Celtics fans since he left, because I think, honestly, when that big three was there, I think KG got a lot more love than Paul Pierce did, just because he's a louder personality, and, you know, he won a Defensive Player of the Year. But Paul Pierce is a staple in Celtics history. He's one of the greatest Celtics of all time. And, you know, he's deserving to get that number up there. He brought the city their 17th banner. So I think it'll be a sight to see. Hopefully the Celtics pull out a win that day, you know, to make the day a complete success, and there'll be no Isaiah Thomas distraction. So, you know, thanks to Paul Pierce. Congratulations to Paul Pierce.
Definitely put a capper on something. Boston sports at this point needs something positive and something historical, so to speak. And I think that, you know, one of the things about this particular game is, how many more Boston Celtics numbers are we going to see retired? Because I think with the sheer number the sheer quantity of numbers that have been retired from the Boston Celtics. The Boston Celtics have players wearing jerseys, you know, that no other team has players wearing, you know, 27s and, you know, the crazy numbers, you know, Jay Crowder wore 99 the other year. I mean, you know, all these insane numbers that you don't expect, you know, that you don't normally see, that, unless it was, you know, Dennis Rodman in the 90s wearing these crazy numbers. The Boston, we're probably not going to get to see too many more players get their number retired. I think the Boston Celtics are probably going to start moving. I mean, if they have more, and again, Boston Celtics was, I mean, Paul Pierce was once in a generation player. So, you know, how many more times is there, even if there weren't this many Boston Celtics numbers retired, how often would this happen? But I think that given the sheer number of jerseys retired, numbers retired at TD Garden in the Boston Celtics franchise, probably not going to see this happen again. Possibly, I mean, I hate to, you know, think, you know, nihilistically or anything, but possibly not again in our lifetime. You never know. You know what I mean? We'd like to hope, you know, that the Boston Celtics, maybe Kyrie Irving spends the rest of his career and, you know, number 11 gets raised to the Raptors. That would be beautiful after maybe 3 or 4 championships here in Boston. But I don't think it's going to happen. I don't see.
I think you're,
do you think Kevin Garnett's number 5 might go? Do you think anybody else might be a candidate that's already played?
Yeah, I think KG's will go at some point, and I think if KG's goes, then Ray Allen's will go. So, you know, no matter how controversial that'll be, but, like, he was still a part of that big three. You know what I mean?
Definitely, definitely. And speaking of that game, I'm looking at my notes here. Join us on Sunday as we close this show out. Our time is running out here. Once again, the Boston Celtics lose to the Indiana Pacers 97-91 after overcoming a 26-point deficit to lead by 1 in the fourth quarter, and ended up falling short, losing by 6 points. Victor Oladipo, 35 points, 10 rebounds, 5 steals to Kyrie Irving's 21 points. What was it? How many assists? I believe he had 5, 6 assists, something
five.
Like that. 5 assists.
Yeah, five.
And a couple of turnovers for Kyrie Irving. Not the best of games. And like I mentioned, join us this Sunday after the game, after Paul Pierce's jersey number is retired. Bobby Manning, the guy that runs the CLNS Media postgame show, and Celtic Stuff Live's Justin Poulin, one of the original Boston Celtics podcasters, will be handling the postgame duties for that game. Anything else you'd like to mention before we sign off, Taylor McLeod, my co-host Taylor McLeod?
Not really. You know, no more ISO ball.
No more ISO ball. Spread the ball around. Get back to what makes you the Boston Celtics, and that's ball movement, sharing the ball, no more hero ball, pass the ball to the open man. You have enough weapons, you have enough players that are up for the task, and you have a mastermind, one of the best coaches, at least the top 2 coaches in the league, along with Greg Popovich and Brad Stevens, that can drop the right plays in ISO ball. That's just not Brad Stevens basketball. Sure, a couple of plays here and there, but not all game, and not in situations where you really need baskets, you know, good baskets, high percentage baskets, which the Boston Celtics did not shoot tonight with their horrible 39% field goal shooting. So with that, once again, the Boston Celtics fall to 40-17 on the season. They drop out of first place in the Eastern Conference with a 97-91 loss to the Indiana Pacers. And with that, I am your host, Nick Sesento, joining you after a brief hiatus and joined by my ever fantastic co-host, Taylor McLeod, always with the insights, the awesome quotes from Twitter, the insights and the analysis. We'd like to thank you for joining us tonight, and please join us again on Sunday as Bobby Manning and Justin Poulin host the Paul Pierce retirement, jersey retirement postgame show. See y'all then.